welcome to the Eating Disorder Therapist Podcast. This is a podcast to help you find peace with food and overcome disordered eating. And I'm Harriet Frew, the Eating Disorder Therapist. I'm so excited to share with you all kinds of stories, tips, information, and guest interviews to help you on your journey in finding peace with food. So thank you so much for listening today. Now today I'm going to be talking about the importance of co-regulation, connection with others, friendships, relationships, all as part of recovery. But before we launch in, time for a short advertisement break. On the outside you have it all together. You're successful, you seem happy, but what your friends and family don't see is that you're living in the vicious cycle of bulimia. You know something needs to change, your health depends on it, but you just don't know where to start or how to move forward. That's where Conquering Bulimia comes in. It's a one-of-a-kind online recovery course brought to you by certified eating disorder coaches Sarah Lee and Merit Elizabeth. They know exactly what you're going through. They both recovered from bulimia and have teamed up with leading experts to create an online course with over 70 videos as a powerful addition to your recovery. Conquering Bulimia is private and self-paced, filled with personal stories and coaching tips that will teach you how to change your behaviours for good. It will challenge and inspire you, and it's affordable, offered an incredible discount of over 60% of the cost of one-on-one coaching. Break free from bulimia on your terms and start living a life of peace you deserve at conqueringbulimia.com. Okay, so let's launch into this week's episode. And this is one of my favorite topics, talking about the value of connection with others being vital for our healing. So you may have heard of the term co-regulation. Now, co-regulation is a way that we learn to feel safe within our bodies, calm our nervous system through the presence of another. And through effective co-regulation, a child will develop the ability to soothe and manage their distressing emotions and sensations from the beginning of life through their connection with nurturing and present primary caregivers. So if you think about effective co-regulation, I must think of it as the St. Bernard dog in the Maudsley animal model. The St. Bernard dog is calm, containing, warm, present. And if you've never heard of the Maudsley animal model, do go and Google it. It's called the New Maudsley Animal Model, and it has fantastic animal metaphors talking all about how you can support someone with an eating disorder. It's really helpful, and I have got other episodes on it somewhere in the catalogue, but yeah, do go and look that up if you haven't heard of it. So when you have a caregiver who can really be that person to teach you sort of that co-regulation, the caregiver is warm, they're calm, they have a very sort of like steady, peaceful tone of voice. The tone of voice is soothing, attuned to distress. And maybe they themselves as well will model effective soothing and coping behaviours. So, you know, hopefully they're not going to fly off the handle or maybe turning to alcohol to cope or avoiding emotions, etc. And of course, no caregiver is perfect and all human beings get it wrong and mess up at different times. But I guess what's most beneficial is if you've had someone in your life who can give you this consistency and this presence and this warmth and encouragement and attunement, at least for most of the time. Okay, so also part of co-regulation is caregivers providing a safe and structured environment with routines and predictability so the child feels safe and secure. Now, children really like things to be quite boring and predictable in a way, because of that helps them to feel safe. Actually, when there's lots of drama, when things are unpredictable, when they're not sort of safe routines and things, I'm not talking about like being really, really rigid and obsessive, but I'm just talking about having that safe scaffolding in a child's life. It helps them just feel much more kind of safe and secure. So a responsive caregiver as well is very attuned to their child. So responsive caregiver, they're going to notice if the child is upset or has a physical need, and then the caregiver can respond appropriately. And hopefully as well, the caregiver is able to manage their own emotions, modelling as well that consistent and calm response, at least most of the time. And of course, they're human. Sometimes they may not stay calm. Very normal part of being a parent. But if they do lose it, I guess, you know, hopefully they can apologise and perhaps rupture and repair and kind of teach the child in a way that, you know, that just happened, but, you know, sorry, and actually, you know, we can repair and we can make up, and just sort of model that kind of way of communicating. Now, if you didn't have a caregiver or caregivers who were able to be present and attuned to you, you may find that you really struggle yourself now to regulate your emotions, and you might find it much harder to trust others and find it hard to believe that in a way that you can rely on others to be there for you. Now, I think really important thing to say here, as I say on this podcast many a time, that we need to have real compassion for our caregivers, because of back in the day, mental health was not recognised as something to build, to nurture, to protect, to even name. So our caregivers were often dealing with their own lack of nurturing, their own kind of lack of attunement, not experiencing that co-regulation in their own childhood. So of course, they're doing the best that they can at the time. And also, you know, they may be very loving, kind, supportive parents, but just maybe dealing with a lot. Maybe they were looking after a sick relative. Maybe they were trying to work a full-time job and bring up children. Maybe there were lots of stresses and things going on in the family. So although they were, you know, very loving, and you knew in a way that your caregiver had your back deep down, they may have not been very present emotionally, because of they just didn't have any resource left in the tank really to be able to give that to you. Now, if you haven't had that sort of attunement, that care, that consistent sort of, you know, someone really responding to your emotions, your physical needs, really tuning into you, you might well be using food or a focus on the body as a maladaptive way of soothing. So where food feels like your friend, the number one thing that you can really, really rely on. And it's not always just food that people turn to. You know, some people may use alcohol. Some people may have little checking behaviors that they do to feel safe. It can show up in multiple ways, and there's no right or wrong, and we're all very individual in terms of how we deal with things. Because I guess what's really important to understand is, as a child, if you didn't get your emotional needs met, if you didn't get that consistent co-regulation and attunement, you wouldn't have had a language or words or understanding to know what was going on there. You would have probably just realized that something just didn't feel quite right, or you may have felt, oh, maybe there's something wrong with me. You just would have known that you didn't feel completely safe, and you would have unconsciously probably then started turning to food or checking or some kind of way to help yourself feel safe. Okay. Now, as we grow up, our need for co-regulation goes beyond childhood, and as adults as well, we need supportive loved ones in our lives. So sometimes this might be your family, but sometimes not. And as adults, as we learn to self-soothe, our need for that co-regulation aspect is less, you know, because we learn to self-soothe, we know we can like tolerate our emotions more, hopefully, and we can, you know, tolerate our kind of solitude, we can reflect, we can really look after ourselves, but we really need that co-regulation part as well. Relationships are very, very important. So when you have relied on food, whether it's through restriction or overeating, this can feel safe, reliable, and trustworthy as your means of kind of finding that sort of sense of maladaptive, I guess, co-regulation. So, and with food, you might feel, actually, I have absolute control over this. It's the one thing in my life that I have absolute control over. Although the paradox is, of course, we often feel wildly out of control. But it can feel very scary to let go of. And I think as well, something that I found recently with some of my clients as well, is that people are generally getting a bit better at the self-care, self-soothing strategies, but often as well, they're doing lots of things on their own, and they are feeling very isolated and alone. They're often missing that co-regulation part. And I think this is the important thing here, because of, if you are doing, you know, breathing exercises, you're eating regularly, you're getting good sleep, you're out in nature, you're doing all of those self-care strategies, I mean, that is fantastic, and, you know, it's massively going to help with your mental health. However, if you are not getting the co-regulation aspect, you're not getting that relationship connection side of things, you're probably still going to get a little bit stuck and feel isolated and alone, because as human beings, we do all need people. And we might be quite different. You know, some people are more extrovert and need people kind of a lot, and that's how they restore their energy. If you're more introverted, perhaps you really need your alone time as well, and that is fine. You know, I think you can absolutely honor that, but you probably still need to have some form of connecting and sort of dipping into that kind of connection with others as well. So another sort of bit of theory that you might want to kind of integrate into all of this as well is thinking a little bit about your attachment style. Now, again, on this episode, I'm not going to go deep into attachment styles, but I guess the main attachment styles that we have are secure attachment, where we feel we can reach out to others, trust others, express our emotions, we feel safe with others. Or we can have that anxious attachment where we're a bit more kind of clingy, a bit more needy, we're worried that people are going to leave us. Or we can feel more avoidant, where we have become very independent, we feel that we don't need others, we can't rely on others, so we kind of avoid that intimacy. So again, you might want to kind of think about that, because of, I know myself, definitely historically, I had more of an avoidant attachment style. And it very much came from my childhood, because as a child, I really learned that I needed to be the support for the adults in my life and also for my younger siblings. So I learned very early on, really, that it was not that safe to open up emotionally because there was too much else going on in my family. You know, me having big emotional kind of needs was just too much for everyone, or that's how it felt. People, it didn't feel like, had the capacity to manage it. So I very much learned to keep things to myself and almost became fiercely independent. And then not really valuing that close connection, feeling actually I can only rely on myself, but then really sort of distancing myself from people. And of course, that's not a good place to be in. I know, particularly when I was in the depths of bulimia, I was very, very isolated. You know, in lots of ways, I had kind of people around me and in my life, but no one really knew what was going on. So having said this, when I look back on my healing journey, the co-regulation, relationship, connection aspect has been significant in helping me heal. And interestingly for me, and this may well be true for you as well, this hasn't really been through my family relationships necessarily, but predominantly probably for me through female friendship. Now, for some of you listening, you may have really close relationships in your family where you can be open and talk about things and really have that kind of deep emotional connection. But it's not always possible. And I think sometimes, you know, our family can be doing the absolute best they can, but sometimes you have to be going outside of your family to get those needs met. But obviously it's very sort of personal to your situation, but you need to kind of think about that. And I know for me, part of my healing journey was really learning to accept perhaps the limitations of what some members of my family can give me, but at the same time having deep love and compassion for my family, and also still maintaining those relationships today, but recognizing perhaps the limits of what I can share in some of those relationships. Okay, so when I look back in terms of where co-regulation has been very helpful for me, I think about at primary school, had a really lovely close friend who also had incredibly supportive family, and I spent a lot of time with this friend and also with her family. And that environment was huge stability for me, connection, warmth, and safety when things at home were a bit more up and down. And when I look back at that and just think about that security I got not only from that friendship, but from the family around my friend as well, I really recognize how much that was so beneficial for me. I also look back to my time in Australia when I went traveling, you know, and one of my closest friends and I, my friend from university, we spent 6 weeks together of our traveling journeys. We're both sort of traveling for about a year. We came together for 6 weeks together, and we're both on a kind of finding ourselves mission, dealing with the past. We're reading loads of self-help books. You know, we were kind of in it deep. We really were. And we had in that time lots of adventures, shared experiences, travel. I remember one evening actually, we were doing this thing called woofing, which was willing workers on organic farms. And we were out in Western Australia, staying on this farm where they practice permaculture. And we're staying with this like really lovely family. And we were staying in the caravan at the end of the garden, and we just couldn't stop laughing. And I remember the mum of the family coming out and just telling us off. And you know when someone just tells you to stop laughing, you just can't stop, can you? And yeah, we have loads of kind of memories and funny little kind of anecdotes and stories from that time together. It was incredibly bonding. But in addition to that, we also talked a lot. We talked about everything and anything. We went very deep. And some of those conversations still stick in my mind today, and I would say have been equally as beneficial as any therapy I have had. And it was just really the fact that we were both on that journey together. And today, I'm still regularly checking in with the people in my life. That is an important part of my kind of co-regulation, my connection. My relationships are really, really important. And interestingly today, my closest friends tend to be therapists, people in personal development, or anyone who's been on their own healing journey. And these are the people with whom I can have deep and meaningful conversations. I can be vulnerable, I can share, and they can share with me too. And these friendships are filled with love, with humor, with shared passions, deep connection. And we all know the shadow parts of one another as well, because we've all been through stuff and we have shared that. And as I continue to grow and develop, I have lost some friends along the way as well. And it's not been so much a big falling out, but more just two roads going in different directions. We just don't relate perhaps as much. And I'm just really wanting more and more of that deeper connection. I'm not so interested in those more sort of superficial connections anymore. And I want to be really close to others who want that too. So what if you're listening though, and you don't have close friends? So I know many of my clients feel very, very lonely and very, very isolated. And it's the classic thing, isn't it? We're more connected than we've ever been by electronics, with the iPhone, etc. But actually, we're more busy, more distracted. We're not often really connecting on that human level that we need. And we know as well, people live longer when they have meaningful relationships. They're so important for our well-being. And centenarians, you know, the people that live to 100, they're not necessarily spiralizing their courgettes, weighing out their food or counting their steps. They're investing in their relationships. They have a sense of purpose and meaning in their life. So we often put time and effort into health, exercise, work and family, but it's really worth investing in our friendships, our relationships too. And it can be a vital component of eating disorder recovery. Okay, so time for a short advertisement break. Are you tired of being tired and fighting with your body while the emotional eating or binges continue? You're alone, not alone. Emotional eating is not your fault, yet it is something you deserve to fully overcome. Are you ready to gain massive insight into your emotional binge triggers and understand the roots of why you are self-sabotaging with food and your body? You'll want to check out emotional eating digestive and hormone expert Amber Romaniak's The No Sugar Coating podcast. With over 450 episodes diving deep into emotional eating and binge triggers, female hormone and gut issues, weight box cravings, and the physical, emotional, and energetic connections to our triggers. After overcoming her own food addiction, binge eating, and emotional eating behaviors fully, and now helping thousands of women in the last 10 plus years, Amber provides a deep level of knowledge to help assist you forward on your journey to food and body freedom and beyond. This podcast will help you build a newfound level of awareness that you've never had before. And there's no diets, no quick fixes, and no band-aid approaches here. The podcast is about building self-love, acceptance, confidence, and becoming in tune with your relationship with food, thoughts, symptoms. And it will help you start to take your power back. If you truly want to feel free from emotional eating, take a listen and visit amberapprove.ca/podcast to start listening and take the next life-changing step on your journey. And you can also listen on iTunes, Spotify, or any podcast app. You're not alone and you can break free. You can also check out a wide variety of resources, a free emotional eating quiz, one-to-one coaching support, and more about body freedom at amberapprove.ca/. Links are in the show notes. So if you are feeling lonely and you want to connect more with others, here are 6 tips to help you with this. Okay, so number 1, you only need a few. So if you have 1 or 2 or 3 close friends who you can be truly yourself with, in my opinion, this is worth thousands of followers or friends or whatever on social media, okay? So the quality of the friendship is the key thing. And if you feel at the moment that you just don't have that, just take some baby steps and be the brave person that reaches out. Okay, most people want to have more friends. And I know for myself, when I have really felt sort of drawn to someone, I felt more of that click, I felt I really want to know this person more, I've often reached out to them. And sometimes it works really well and we become friends, and sometimes it doesn't. But don't put loads of pressure and investment on it having to work on this one instance. Reach out to a few different people that you feel that you'd really like to get to know better. And you know, some of those might really work out and some of them won't, and that's okay. Okay, rather than putting huge amounts of pressure on one person. Okay, number two, embrace vulnerability. So many people are scared of being vulnerable and trusting others. You might have received conditional messages growing up about the way you looked, your interests, or the way you behaved. You might have been bullied at school, and understandably, this might result in you carrying intense shame and questioning your likability. Therefore, you hide away and you don't put yourself out in the world, and it leaves you really isolated and lonely. But the only way we can really connect closely with others is through our vulnerability. And you might need to just take baby steps with this, but be brave and persevere in going out into the world. And maybe start with a shared activity or a group where the pressure to interact face to face is less intense. Now, I think as well with vulnerability, you don't want to be just like opening up and sharing everything in one go. What happens in friendship is we normally kind of experiment a bit. You know, one person shares a little bit and the other person does. And you kind of see how that feels to begin with. Because with friendships, sometimes we can't just like rush them overnight and become best buddies with someone really, really quickly. It takes time to nurture and build that friendship and to establish trust. Number three, show persistence. So you might have to do a bit of searching to find your tribe. So we all need people who get us, the ones who share our interests, our passions, our little quirks. And if you don't have people on your doorstep to connect with, you might have to expand your efforts and go further afield. So this, of course, is where the internet can really benefit us as we connect with people the world over. So I know, again, this is perhaps going against the kind of face-to-face co-regulation side of things, but I think, you know, often, I know for myself, some of my really good friends that I've met in the last couple of years, for example, Gemma Richards from This Food Thing podcast, we met on social media. Since we have become closer friends, we've met several times in London, gone out for lunch. It's been really, really nice. So it can be the first step to actually, you know, meeting someone online. And see yourself as a curious adventurer who's collecting different experiences, and trust that friendships will come along your way in time. Number four, remember that most people are nice. Now, if you've had a difficult childhood, you may have not experienced the best qualities in human nature firsthand, and you'll be anxious of rejection, and you might expect more of the same. Now, there is a lot of hurt and anger in the world, but people are generally kind and like helping others, and many have had their own fair share of problems and experiences, which are very relatable to all of us. So if someone seems to have a perfect life with it all together, it's extremely unlikely to be true, rather an effective mask. And the imperfections of human nature actually bind us together and can be an immense source of support and encouragement. Number five, don't take things personally. So don't take things too personally and avoid analysis paralysis. Sometimes if a friend cancelled, it's generally because they're too busy or they have their own struggles. Instead, actually recognise your own worth rather than assuming the worst case scenario that, oh, I'm as unlikable. And if someone repeatedly lets you down, maybe this isn't someone you want to invest in a long-term friendship. Okay. And number six, know your worth as a friend. So I know I often go into situations and I expect that people are going to like me. Okay. And because of that, I tend to go in with like quite good energy. I'm happy to initiate conversation. I'll reach out to someone. I'll smile. Now, people don't always like me. Okay. That's okay. But actually, a lot of people that I meet and, you know, do like me and have become really good friends, okay? So rather than focusing on your perceived lack or comparing yourself to others, look to the things that you have to give in friendship. Your sense of humour, your thoughtfulness, your enthusiasm, your taste in music, your love of tattoos or animals or whatever it might be. Each of us has much to bring and share in friendship, and it's worth taking the risk to access the joy of meaningful connection. So, don't overlook co-regulation in your healing journey. You really can't do it all alone. It's a really important part of the road. Healthy relationships are so valuable for good mental well-being, and healthy relationships will absolutely support you in your recovery. So if you recognize that you don't have people in your life that you can reach out to today, you know, think about what's the first baby step for you, okay? And let me know how you get on if you'd like to. Send me a DM on Instagram. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're not following me already on Instagram, do seek me out, @theeatingdisordertherapist_. For further support with your relationship with food, do go to theeatingdisordertherapist.co.uk. If you're a professional listening, you may be interested in my eating disorders and body image online courses. Links are in the show notes. I'm also starting to offer more supervision to professionals. So if you're interested in that, do send me an email, harriet.frew@gmail.com, or send me a DM on Instagram. And if you are struggling with your relationship with food, you may be interested in my Overcoming Bulimia and 10 Steps to Intuitive Eating courses. Again, links are in the show notes. If you enjoy this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you'd follow, rate and review, as it helps it reach so many more listeners. Thank you so much for listening today, and I look forward to sharing another podcast episode with you very soon.